You're rolling.
I am.
Okay.
So hard.
Hey everyone, welcome to What Are You Watching? I'm Alex Withrow and I'm joined by my best man, Nick Dostal. How you doing there, Oppie?
I am atomically excited to be here.
You're being a very good sport for this, very good sport. We've already talked about Oppenheimer. The fans know this.
We did a whole pod.
It was not that long ago. We did a whole podcast about it, did a whole pod.
But
we did, we spent enough time talking about Christopher Nolan, spent a lot of time talking about Oppenheimer, but
somebody.
That was then and this is now. Somebody.
Somebody over here.
Things have changed. Things have changed. And I just wanted to, this is as loose of an episode as it gets. It's going to be very short, a very just quick bonus episode here, because what I realized is things have changed here. So I just wanted to share those changes with our lovely listeners as well. And you're good enough just to be along for the ride.
And let me jump in here and say that, My fellow mad movie buffs, your fearless leader and host of What Are You Watching podcast, Alex Withrow, has developed a deep, deep obsession. It's an Oppenheimer obsession, everybody. It is on a level of which that I've known Alex's obsessions. I support Alex's obsessions, and I support this one, but this one has gotten crazy, yo.
Yeah, my wife is saying this too. But before I kick it off, let me say, perhaps you will agree. I made this point to her just last night. When I saw the movie Waves, I was like obsessed with that, where I did not shut up about it. I'm like, you, Nick, you have to go see it. Ali, you have to come see it. I was like telling everyone about it. Oppenheimer doesn't need the extra press, so I'm not going around. I haven't been big on Twitter about it. I'm just going and having my own relationship with it, but I'm not like, no, best movie ever. This thing fucking rocks. Even last night with Allie, I'm like, yeah, it's good. And she's like, but you've seen it so many times. And I'm like, I know, but you've read the book. And I go, I know. I guess I'm a little embarrassed at this point. Yeah. Like, I don't know what the hell's happened. Saw it last night.
I know you did.
I literally saw the movie last night. So how I want to start is, you know, I have our Nolan rankings here and how we had them after Oppenheimer. I'll do this damn quick. You put Oppenheimer at 5 in your Nolan rankings. I put Oppenheimer at 8.
And I remember saying in the pod.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
I was like, 8. I go, I guarantee you this number is going to change.
And I said, probably.
Yeah, you were like, probably.
Yeah.
Probably. But from where it was at, recency bias and all of this and that, I just remember in my head, I was like, let's just see how long it can go. How long it can go before that jumps up. And I had no idea that we'd be reporting back a month or two later.
Yep. Almost 2 months.
Having this conversation.
Yep.
I can imagine what the number is, because I know what it's not.
Yeah.
But I think I know what it is.
Do
you want me to take a guess?
Yeah, go for it.
I think it's number 2.
Oppenheimer is the best movie Christopher Nolan has made, and it's my number 1.
No, it's not!
Yeah.
You said you would never go over Memento.
I know. Because here's what happened. Here's what happened. Here's
Judas!
What I have realized. I know. I can't believe it. Memento will always be my favorite Christopher Nolan movie. That is true. It always will be. That I got to understand movies. I loved movies so much, but it helped me understand movies in such a way. Helped me understand independent cinema. I saw Memento in the theater, thanks to Alamo Drafthouse, 2 weeks ago, which has been great because I'm on my Oppenheimer kick. And I'm watching it in the theater, and I had seen Oppenheimer, I think the day before, and I went, Memento is your favorite for those nostalgic reasons. That's why you're holding on to it and calling it your number one. Memento is not the best movie Christopher Nolan has made. If we look at sound, cinematography, score, editing, performance. If you look at what it means to put a movie together, I do intend to talk humbly. I think Oppenheimer is the best film Christopher Nolan has made. It is what I would put at my number one. I guess that means I have to put Memento at number 2.
Uh-huh.
It's what we talk about a lot, best versus favorite. Like,
yeah.
they can vie for number 1, but like Memento is, I love that movie. I loved watching it in the theater. I was having so much fun watching it again, and I'm like, I love it. I own it. I watch it for our Christopher Nolan pod. I watch it in order for the Nolan pod and then regular. Then I'm like, fuck it. I'm still going to go to Alamo. But Oppenheimer. I don't know what happened. I don't know how we got here. So I'm going to go through my timeline because I haven't even mentioned how many times I've seen it. And again, I'm not going to keep you here long. We're going to go through this quickly. Viewing number one, I watched it. I watched it in 70 millimeter, and then we recorded a podcast about it very shortly after. That was one of the, frankly, I underplayed it on that podcast. That is one of the worst movie-going experiences I've ever had because of a disruptive audience member. Again, when we recorded that episode, I had seen the movie once.
Yeah.
One time is not enough times to put this movie together. It is not enough times to figure out that every single thing tracks, that every justification for color or black and white perfectly adds up. It's like a math equation, genuinely, the movie is. So I went and saw it with my aunt in regular format. We did a Barbenheimer day just on a regular DCP, regular movie theater. That was viewing two. That was cool. That was 3 days after I saw it the first time. 7 days later, Dan was visiting, and I still hadn't seen it in IMAX. He had not seen it at all, so we saw it in IMAX. That was the first viewing I put it all together. Now, keep in mind, it's his first viewing, so our conversation after was really cool because any question he had, I could pretty much answer it, which I couldn't do on first viewing. Like, I just couldn't.
Yeah.
So then 6 days go by, and I had already teased on our Oppenheimer pod, I teased that I had tickets to the Air and Space Museum on August 4th, and that's a true IMAX screen, 86 feet, fucking massive. It's like, the sentiment of the movie is there. The structure of the movie is always the same. The performances are technically always the same. It is a completely fucking different movie on a true IMAX screen. I mean, I'm like speechless, and I've seen the movie so many times, but just seeing it and being like, wow. I mean, what an experience. What a truly like mesmerizing ride. And I thought I was done. I thought at four, that's plenty. And 16 days go by. I have a birthday. I'm just like moving on with my life.
Moving on with my life.
And I go, you know, the closest theater that this is playing to you in 70 millimeter IMAX, the way Nolan wants everyone to see it, if you can, the closest theater is 170 miles away from me. I'm talking myself out of this constantly, of course. And then I'm like, man, what's the big deal? Like, you love the movie, you can't get it out of your head. Wake up in the morning, drive 3 hours to go see it, sit there for 3 hours, and then drive 3 hours back. Why not? So that is exactly what I did. And it was amazing. I have no complaints. And then something tipped over because I was done. There's no logical need to keep going. There's not. I've seen it five fucking times in every format possible. 70 millimeter, regular, IMAX, true IMAX, true IMAX 70 millimeter. It's done. So 6 days go by. And so that was on a Sunday. So 6 days go by and I'm working out in the morning on a Saturday. I'm just working out. I was listening to the audiobook, American Prometheus, which is based on 22 hours long. It's like 700 pages. This thing is long. I'm just devouring it. And I said, all right, you're going to be a lunatic and you're going to go see it a sixth time when you finish the book. So I'm working out in the gym. I'm like halfway done with the book. I go, I'm going to see this. I'm going to fucking see this right now. I'm going to buy an IMAX 11 a.m. show. And then I realize, I go, if you buy this ticket and go see this movie, if you see this for a sixth time, you are tying your record for the most times you have ever seen a single movie in the theater in its first run. And that was when I made my parents take me to the movie theater six times to see Independence Day in the summer of 1996. That happened. Never thought I'd beat it. So that is incentive enough to buy the fucking ticket. That is what I do. And I love the viewing. I have a great time. It starts at 11. It ends at 2. I got my whole day ahead of me. But now it's like a thing. And I go, you're going to finish the book. And then like you can't just leave it here with the record tied. You got to go for a seventh time. You just got to do it.
You got to go for a seventh.
So I finished the book. 5 days goes by and I buy another true IMAX ticket at the Air and Space Museum because I was told it was the last day. So this is viewing number seven. I'm told that's the last day it's going to be at the Air and Space Museum. It's still there as of this recording. But I went and I'm like, wow, this is great. So that's the all-time movie record. I'm done with the book. Now we can really put all this shit to bed. Seven viewings. We can all go home. So I buy the screenplay, buy the actual book. And the screenplay is written in the first person, which I've never seen nor read before, and it is remarkable. And I'm reading the screenplay, and I'm like, I could fucking finish this screenplay and go watch this at the Alamo Draft House, because I haven't been able to see it in subtitles, and there are some things I missed. Like at one point, Oppenheimer says, when they look at me, they see a prophet. When they look at straws, they see themselves. I thought he meant a prophet as in money, like money prophet. He means prophet like as in, you know, the Messiah, like a prophet. These things don't matter to most normal human beings, but I was, I'm honing in on these, the level of detail, to say nothing of the fact of how much context the actual book, American Prometheus, which won the Pulitzer, like big deal, really good book. It was a very good book. How much context I'm getting and how, like, there's no composite characters in this movie. That's why the cast is so big, because they're all actually based on a real person. So I go see it. Why not? I finished the screenplay. I wanted to go because I go to the movies once or twice a week and there was nothing else I wanted to see. And I went, well, okay. Actually, that's not true. That was a lie. I just remembered.
Yep. Just
I had a ticket to 2001 A Space Odyssey at the Alamo Draft House on Tuesday. And I refunded that and got a ticket for Oppenheimer instead. Yeah, no. So then it's done. There's no need for this to keep going. That's it. It's done. And then I realized there's a few BBC documentaries. I like BBC documentaries. One is called The Trial of J. Robert Oppenheimer. It is narrated by Campbell Scott. And in reenactments, David Strathairn plays Oppenheimer. And let me tell you who watched that movie before they made Oppenheimer. Christopher Nolan. Because this BBC, or this rather PBS documentary, is exactly like the movie, like cutting back and forth from the boardroom stuff. There's no straw stuff. I watched those and then I thought, you know, I've only saw it on like 70 millimeter once. And so I went back to the same theater where my first disastrous screening was. And last night I saw Oppenheimer for a ninth time and I enjoyed every minute of it. When I saw it for an eighth time, I had spent 24 hours of my life watching Oppenheimer. And now I've seen it 9 times and I'm okay. Everything's okay. I don't know, man. It just happened. But again, I'm not trying to say like I've talked to people who the movie, they've seen it once. They don't want to go see it again because they were a little bored. And I shrug and go, yeah, I get it. Explosion wasn't big enough. Yeah, I get it. It's fine.
Explosion wasn't big enough.
I'm not here to argue with you. I just think the reason why I kept going back to it is because the movie is about to leave theaters and with the occasional like bringing it back for a night or something, I'm not going to get this again. I don't know the next time I'm going to get a 70 millimeter IMAX movie like this. And for someone who's dedicated their entire life to cinema, it means something to me and I appreciate it. So that's why I kept going back. Of course, I'm going to get the 4K as soon as it's available, but it won't be the same. And that's okay. So I was just trying to take this in as many times as possible. Obviously, when I saw it last night in 70 millimeter, it's the same print because it's literally in the exact same theater in the exact same auditorium. And it looked like pristine the opening day when I saw it there. And I could see some wear and tear on it yesterday. And I was like, this is cool. Like, that's how gold. Remember when movies used to do that? Like, it would skip and you'd see like the film grain and stuff. I don't know. So, yeah, I'm just nerding out. That's all. Just nerding the hell out and really having a great time with it. Love the book. Love the screenplay. I'm reading the Bhagavad Gita right now, Oppenheimer's favorite book, Hindu scripture, because I think, you know, I'm just trying to like learn more about it. I don't know. I really like the movie. I like it a lot.
Ladies and gentlemen.
A timeline of obsession.
I get it, man. I get it. I think there's also an element to this it's not just the movie, it's the whole real life situation.
It is not, that is correct.
Yeah.
The first 4 times was just the movie, and then I went, wait, this story is crazy. And yeah. What is in the movie is this Lewis Strauss guy was a fucking asshole. It is so much worse. It is hinted at, it is suggested, spoilers, I should have said that up top. I'm getting into that. If you haven't seen Oppenheimer, just stop. I guess I haven't talked about spoilers. Spoilers are starting now. Oppenheimer. Spoilers. It is alluded to very fucking heavily in the book that the Casey Affleck character is responsible for killing the Florence Pugh character. Yeah. It is not like suggested that. It is like this is actually probably what happened because she was a known communist. It's just like the real story is crazy. So yeah, I've become like fascinated with the real story. When I sat down for my first fucking viewing of this movie, I thought J. Robert Oppenheimer was British. I did not know a single thing about the man other than he created the atomic bomb. And now I feel like I know damn near everything about him. But I don't know. I became truly mesmerized with this point in time. I don't know. I just became fascinated with it and fascinated with all the people involved. So we're like living in the midst of, it's not an obsession that I'm like frantic about and like manic and screaming. Wanted to have a pod about it. But even Allie's like, you've never talked about a movie this much, but I'm not like, you have, like with Waves, I went, you have to come see this with me.
It's
like, yeah, it's just, it's a weird. But yes, the historical aspect of it is what I'm latching onto for sure.
If I'm going to bring this back to me.
Please do.
Because, well, you know, I mean.
You are an actor.
I am an actor. I do actually understand what you're going through to some level. Because there's nothing else for me to really research. But I believe I saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood 7 or 8 times. I think it was probably 7 in its initial run. Mm-hmm. 7 times, similarly to you, to watch a 3-hour movie, more or less.
Yeah.
In a 2-month period.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I relate to and what you're saying is there's something that lives in this movie that you just want to be around.
That's it. It is. I feel comfortable. I do.
There's like this weird. And I don't really know. I mean, it's easier for me to say that about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood because I just chalked it up to, I want to hang out with Rick and Cliff.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to see what they're doing with their day. I want to live with this music. There's a little bit more for me as a fun, joyful way to go into that. But I understand that there's just this way that this movie just sort of makes you feel that you're not going to get in this way ever again.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can sit back and watch Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and be like, oh, I love this movie. This is all the thing. But I remember July and August and September of 2019 as the few months in my life where I had an affair.
Yeah.
I had a deep like need to just go back.
That's what I'm in right now. Yep. Yeah.
And so this is why I'm laughing, but I'm also getting it. But what's cooler about your situation is that because this was based off of real people and a real situation and, I mean, real decades of information and things like that, there's so much more to dive into.
Yeah.
So the more that you're diving into, the more that you're actually learning more because you're seeing what the movie is omitting or just subtly kind of alluding to. And you're like, oh, my God, well, this is. If the movie had more time, I'm sure it would deal with this whole entire thing. But this is how Nolan chose to specifically keep and not talk about certain things because he needed to make a movie.
Yeah.
He needed to make certain decisions.
Exactly.
And so you're seeing what all of this is, but now knowing a further backstory. I'm sure some people will listen to this podcast and be like, my God, he's insane.
I get it. I get it.
I think, I mean, yes, you are insane, but I love you for it. But I also think that it's honestly kind of cool.
Well, that's nice.
I mean, Jesus Christ, life is short. You know, like,
that's what I mean. If you're going to get obsessed with something, just have fun. I'm just being safe. I'm not doing anything wrong.
Yeah, you're not doing anything fucking wrong. You might as well. I would have people tell me, Dan including, when I was going through my Once Upon a Time in Hollywood thing, people would make fun of me. They'd be like, are you really going again? And I go, yeah, because you know what? Honestly, at this place in my life, there's nowhere I'd rather be. And I look back at that and I celebrate that 3-month torrid affair with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It meant so much to me. The soundtrack of that movie reverberates in my head. I remember walking home and feeling like how I was feeling. I don't take back a single thing. So if this is where you're at, enjoy it. And I say go for a 10th time because that way you can round it out into the double digits.
I know, because it's always a milestone now. Now I'm like, do I get into double digits? But, you know, so I talk a lot about, oh, I've seen this movie this amount of times, and now I'm giving like an explanation of how you could see how that could happen within a freak like me. And I've written down in my phone the date I saw Oppenheimer, like every screening. So, cause I want to be, you know, sure I've done it with this. I'm doing it. I did it with The Irishman. I only saw The Irishman in the theater once, but every time I've watched it subsequently, I'm writing it down just cause I want to be able to track. But, just really quickly, cause Allie's like, what is it about the movie? And I said, I don't know other than I find it comforting. And it's really the only movie that I can equate science and math to the creative process, to art,
yeah.
Implosion, fission, fusion, gaseous diffusion, whatever it's going to be, you know? I mean, I have like the most primitive understanding possible, but I get that they get it. And the way that he's cutting it together and like watching, you know, Cillian Murphy, just, he's like, why is he throwing these glasses in the corner? It's like, oh, I get it. And then, you know, that opening kind of montage, can you hear the music when you're just running all back and forth? And then he's staring at Picasso and the music fucking soars up. And he keeps cutting back and forth, Oppenheimer, Picasso, Oppenheimer, Picasso. Most people look at a Picasso and don't understand it, but this fucking guy does. And I get that that's what he's telling us. I love it. And yeah, there's so much, there's just so much more to the story. Like but in the end, it flash forwards to him being very old and he's like getting the award in the White House. That was an award that JFK honored him for, like appointed him for, and really, really wanted to give it to him. And then he was killed. So he got that award, I'm saying like a week after JFK was killed. Jackie was actually still living in the White House and called Oppenheimer and Kitty up to the quarters and was like, Jack really wanted you to have this. And that wow. Oppenheimer said that was like the most moving moment of his life. But you know, you can't, that movie's got to keep going. But just knowing that little stuff, knowing, I don't know, I love all that shit. So yes, I just wanted to share my Oppenheimer obsession. If anyone's on that train with me. I know there are some people on Reddit who are on the train with me. I'm too shy to comment on Reddit. I just sneak and look. I've never commented on Reddit or posted. I'm too shy. But I do see people on there and I like them. So
and I like them.
Real quick, I didn't know how to talk about Oscars when we recorded it. I still don't know. What I do want to say is Oppenheimer's with easily, obviously, going to be my favorite movie of the year. This is the first movie I'm confident saying is going to be in my top 10 of this decade. I don't really know where. At this point, I kind of feel confident saying it'll be my, we're going to do a really fun episode in January 2025, our top 25 of the century so far.
Ooh.
So start working on that. It's going to be a lot of fun. Ranked. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. And this will be on there. I know this will be on there. This is the newest movie that I absolutely love. I think we're in the midst of a masterpiece, which is not a word I've thrown around a lot post-COVID. So Oscars, what's it going to mean? I don't know. I think it's cool that your favorite movie of last year cleaned up at the Oscars. I'm just saying. I don't think this is going to clean up, but I do think it'll get nominated for a lot, and I do think it'll be in contention. I don't think the Oscars like Christopher Nolan very much. I don't know why that is. I mean, Dunkirk did win some. I don't know the way this is going to go. I very easily wrote 11 possible nominations that it could get. That could easily be bumped up to 14, which then it would tie as the most nominated movie ever. Am I being hyperbolic or is this in play? With Dune 2 being pushed, that
yeah.
They would have been neck and neck for the technical awards. But now with Dune pushed to next year, I don't know what happens with Oppenheimer. I don't know. Here are the ones I wrote down. And I mean, this movie is going to get nominated for some. I can't confidently say it'll win anything right now. I can't. They just don't vibe with Nolan that much. It'll win some technical ones, but I think it could do picture, director, actor for Cillian Murphy, supporting actress Emily Blunt, supporting actor Robert Downey Jr., adapted screenplay, score, sound, cinematography, editing, and visual effects. Because even though all the effects are practical, those are still visual effects. That's 11. It could do that without breaking a sweat. This is also a period film. They like to nominate costume design. They like to nominate production design. And they age a lot of people very well in this. So this could get makeup. That's 14 right there. Again, don't know if it's going to happen. I don't. That's very, very huge. That would be a big statement. But I think we're going to see a big showing. And I think, you know, I've talked a lot of shit on the Oscars the past few years. I think they've struggled post-COVID because I haven't agreed with a lot of the movies they've nominated and celebrated. It's okay. And again, I don't know, maybe people turn their backs on Oppenheimer to get nominated for nothing. I would find that very hard to believe given the amount of money it's made, but I just think we're in for an exciting end of the year. We have a lot of cool movies coming out. We have Scorsese, we have David Fincher, we have a lot of cool shit coming out. So yeah, here we are.
I'm going to add one more to the list though.
Yeah.
I think you can add Florence Pugh into the supporting or alongside.
Alongside Emily Blunt, you could also, the more I watch it, you could sneak in Damon in there for supporting actor. The Oscars like Damon. Neither of them will replace Blunt or Downey. Those are the two premier positions. But deciding to kick Blunt up to lead actress would be a big mistake. They shouldn't do that. They shouldn't do that. They should keep it supporting. But yeah, Florence Pugh, if they push her to get nominated, she's not in it that much. But, you know, it's a performance. Obviously, a lot of people are talking about for... Some people are talking about it for very stupid reasons. Yeah, sex. Ooh, consensual sex in an R-rated movie. Ooh, that lasts for 15 fucking seconds. That's it. That, you know, and if that happens, if Pugh gets nominated with the ones I mentioned and or Damon, then it's the most nominated film in the history of the Oscars. I don't see that for it. I slid in adapted screenplay there as a gimme. That's not a gimme. They may not nominate him for screenplay. They may not, but we'll see.
Well, I know what my What Are You Watching is going to be.
Oppenheimer. If it's still around, it would be great if you could go see it in IMAX because, man, what a ride. But yeah, I guess that's my What Are You Watching. Can I make it to 10? If any, there we have a few people who I know listen to the podcast that also track what I write on Letterboxd because I'm still in 2023. I've been logging every single movie I watch, every single one in. I'm on there like Oppenheimer, number 8, Oppenheimer, number 9. People love it. That's it. Thanks for being a good sport. Oh, your boy David Krumholtz is so good in the movie. I kind of stepped on it
so good
on the first episode when you brought him up because I didn't know who you were going to talk about. He's so good. The way like that guy really, really loved Oppenheimer in real life, and you can see the respect there. He's great. Everyone's great in it. Love it. All right. Thanks, everyone. This has been... Oppenheimer Anonymous here.
Yes.
Meaning one adjourned. We're going to keep talking about the movie when and if it's nominated for a bunch of Oscars. That's it. Go see Oppenheimer. It's about to leave. Thanks everyone for listening and happy watching. Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. You can watch my films and read my movie blog at alexwithrow.com. NicholasDostal.com is where you can find all of Nick's film work. Send us mailbag questions at whatareyouwatchingpodcast@gmail.com or find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd at WAYW_podcast. Next time, we are ready to laugh as we discuss the funniest movies we have ever seen. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be funny. Stay tuned.